Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Hello, you're listening to Let's Eat In. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and this is on Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza. Today's sponsor is Fairway Market. Check out fairwaymarket.com. You can also check out Fairway Market, interestingly enough, in the book that I'm holding right now, which is written by the lovely Sherry Eisenberg. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Cool. So, her book is called The Food Lover's Guide to Brooklyn. It just came out 2 days ago.
June 1st.
June 1st. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's gorgeous. There's actually on the cover of Roberta's Pizza, which we're about to eat. oh, yeah, by the way. Okay, anyway. So it's a guide to the best local specialties, markets, recipes, restaurants, and events. That's an interesting group of things. It's not just restaurants. It's local special. It's like what? It's food.
It's everything about food in Brooklyn. So I go neighborhood by neighborhood through the whole borough, and for each neighborhood, I suggest restaurants and places to eat, people who make food in that neighborhood, people who sell food in that neighborhood. So you'll find things like cheese stores, bakeries, and then there are also recipes from, in a lot of cases, it's interesting Brooklyn flea vendors who've given me recipes.
And I'm looking at one right now for Salvatore Brooklyn's ricotta.
And it's so much easier than I thought it would be. I had never made ricotta before. I tested it for the book, and it's fabulous. It's really a totally different thing than buying it from the grocery store.
Good for them for giving away their secrets.
Yeah, I was really surprised. I think only one place said they wouldn't give me their recipe. Everybody else was totally happy to cooperate and gave me exactly what I asked for. And I think that there's a real generosity in Brooklyn that's lovely.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, there seems to be like a collaborative sharing spirit.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure you have the Brooklyn Flea as one of the events or whatever it is.
I don't know. The Brooklyn Flea, I feel like they're sort of all over the book, actually, because a lot of the stores that are really trendy right now and a lot of the people who are making food started at the Flea. And the Flea is actually this amazing incubator in Brooklyn for the next generation of people making food. So I feel like they're all over the place.
Yeah, that's like could be a separate category.
Absolutely.
And I see you have Eagle Street Rooftop Farms, which
I do. That's really fun. That's such a fun place to go visit and to climb up the steps, and suddenly you see this amazing Manhattan skyline with vegetables in front of it.
Yeah, it's booming now.
It is booming now.
Great. And you also went to like every corner of the borough. It's not just these places that we hear so much about in the news, but I see like, you know, hand pulled noodles on 71st Street, Sunset Park. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I went to Bensonhurst and Sunset Park, and I really went, you know, sort of to every neighborhood in Brooklyn looking for what you would want to eat if you were there. And I did an enormous amount of research, but I also spent a lot of time just wandering around each neighborhood.
Stumbling upon things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a lot of, you know, I think a lot of food writers and a lot of Brooklyn foodies know what's going on in Williamsburg and Park Slope. And, you know, when you have the lead time of a book, you're not going to break news on that. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I got to places before people covered them, but before the book came out, other stories would come out about these places. But when you're talking about something like Brighton Beach or Bay Ridge or Bensonhurst, the more off the path neighborhoods that are further away from Manhattan, I think get a lot less coverage. And so for Brooklyn foodies who really already know what's going on in Williamsburg and Greenpoint, they're going to be surprised to see how much there is that they don't know about the other neighborhoods.
Cool. I feel like that you're kind of like an explorer. Like there's a definitely like a wandering tribe of Brooklyn foodies who try to be the first one to find that rare gem that Absolutely. Nobody else did first.
So. Yeah. And I'm a travel writer by trade. So mm-hmm. even though I live in Brooklyn and this is my home, I did sort of treat it like the same kind of research project as if I was writing about food in Singapore. And I read everything there was to read. And then I just gave myself the time to wander and see what I found.
Cool. What was the most exciting find that was unexpected, maybe?
You know, I think that... for me, I really enjoyed Sunset Park. Fifth Avenue is full of these amazing little Mexican restaurants. And I spent several weeks doing the taco tour of Wow. Sunset Park. And I would bring friends with me and I would be like, okay, here are the rules. Don't eat before you come. Bring a bottle of water and like a stash of plastic forks. And we're going to go to like 12 to 14 different taco places today. Absolutely. Cool. It's fun, but it's really exhausting. And for me, I was doing it every Saturday and Sunday for about 6 months, and I was doing about 30 places every weekend. And my husband and I were bringing other friends with us. So for them, they always thought it was this cool novelty idea to spend a day eating.
And you guys were just like, this is
getting really crazy. Tired of Absolutely. My husband was such a trooper, but by the end, he was like, please break other people. I can't eat another taco. Don't make me.
And they say the Mexican food in New York is no good, right?
You have to get, you know, to the places where maybe they don't speak English and maybe you have to point at what you want, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe you have to take a minute to sort of figure out the menu. It's not going to be what you're used to necessarily, but there's great Mexican food. You just have to be willing to hunt it down.
Weed through it. Yeah.
You do. I also found the Chinese food was really exciting.
Yeah. Hasn't Sunset Park just the Chinatown there taken over?
It is. It's amazing. Eighth Avenue is so much fun to me. You know, from like tiny little dive places with noodle soups and dumplings where it's just shockingly cheap. How the food is, to like these amazing opulent dim sum parlors mm-hmm. where the setting is really fun. And you can tell that for the local Chinese families, you know, it's sort of a big family thing to go Definitely. Spend a good chunk of the afternoon there eating dim sum.
That sounds really fun. I was joking before that it sounds like Sherry's book, the mission of it is kind of like the opposite of mine.
It is. For like 6 months, I didn't cook or eat in. And so that's what I was really craving. So when your book came out, I was like, oh, that must have been fun.
Like, I just don't have room. I can't possibly make something.
No, I ate out every night. And if I was going to skip a night for some reason, because I had to go to a friend's party or something, mm-hmm. I would do two the next night to make up for it.
You were like on a mission.
I was on a mission. It was really intense.
You must get that experience from going to other places when you do travel writing, because you only have so mm-hmm. much time. People put you out up there somewhere and you're like, oh my god, I have to go.
Yeah, if the magazine is sending me to Quebec City to eat foie gras, I'm probably eating foie gras at every meal, you know. But after 3 or 4 days, you get to go home and then have a salad and not eat foie gras for a while. Whereas when you're spending, you know, a good 7 months of intense research and there's no break from it, it is a little bit more tiring.
Oh, what a trooper. Well, thank you for doing this for us so that we may benefit from the research that you got.
In the end, it was a lot of fun. You know, it was a really great experience. And I have to say, I think part of why it was such a great experience is that there really is so much in Brooklyn that's exciting. I'm not sure that every city would be able to provide this kind of information.
Interesting. Yeah. And just the borough of Brooklyn, which we were just talking about, we were looking for songs and we couldn't find any songs about Brooklyn. We're like, there's a lot of songs about New York, New York, New York, and yeah, Brooklyn. But, you know, it's funny. There's all these other, like, I'm sure you've heard of the new Brooklyn cookbook mm-hmm. coming out this fall. And Michael Harlan Turkell also shot it. Mm-hmm. I was just reading the other day Bill McKibben's new book called E-Earth. Mm-hmm. And there was like just some random aside. He was talking about how building like more local economies was a positive change to focus on in the future. And he just like kind of offhandedly mentioned like, oh, in a recent like New York Times article, Brooklyn has a booming like artisanal food scene, like in locally, you know, made crafts. And I was just like, whoa, Brooklyn's really on the map. I feel like everyone's like talking about, you know, Brooklyn food as a distinct thing from separate from New York.
Yeah, it is. I feel like the Brooklyn restaurant scene is a totally different thing than what you would find in Manhattan. Even if it's a restaurant where the entrees are $20, with very few exceptions, you can still wear jeans and there's still a casual vibe and there are still sort of young people, you know, tattoos and kind of the hipster look. It's just a very different atmosphere. You know, if you're spending $25 for an entree in Manhattan, it's probably a little dressier and a little more polished and it's not so casual and comfortable as Brooklyn is.
That's an interesting distinction.
I think some of that is that, you know, chefs who made their names at big Manhattan restaurants really want to do something that is more casual when they open up their restaurants in Brooklyn, and they want it to feel comfortable and personal and young, right. You know, and they know it's not going to be expense account people who need it to be a really formal, polished atmosphere. Uh-huh. It's going to be people who live in the neighborhood who just want great food.
Absolutely. And you definitely have the scope of different communities, ethnic communities that are like just going out for dim sum, and that's what they do.
Yeah, absolutely.
In Manhattan, you know, Queens, yes, you'd still see that, but yeah, Brooklyn's where it's at.
It is. It's such an exciting moment for Brooklyn, and I feel like I did sort of luck out with the timing. When I first started working on the book maybe a year and a half ago, I felt like, you know, Brooklyn was very up and coming with the food scene, and the Flea had started to launch a lot of different places, and exciting restaurants were opening everywhere. But I didn't know what was going to be happening now, you know, a year and a half later, and whether or not that would be sustained. Right. And I think it's actually grown so much more than I would have hoped, you know, when I first started working on it.
Yeah. I should have this friend of mine on sometime, but, you know, Greenpoint Food Market, it just kind of burst. Like, it just has blossomed into so many people, like, deciding to run a, like, you know, start up a cookie company or something.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Like, infectious.
And people's, you know, weekend plaything is becoming their primary job, which is really wonderful that people can support themselves doing food businesses that they would have originally thought might just be hobbies.
Totally. Now, do you see other people from around the world, around the country, picking up this book and just like getting a real good taste, or do you think?
I do. I think if you're a foodie and you're visiting from San Francisco or some other part of the country, I think it's really nice to have everything in one place for you. And the publisher designs this book to be what they call glove compartment size, but it's also purse or backpack size, you know?
It totally is.
It's not a coffee table book like I think the new Brooklyn Cuisine cookbook is going to be. It's definitely something you can sort of get ratty and leave in your bag and refer to. It has these maps that I think are really helpful for each neighborhood, so you can see what's right near where you're standing and what your choices are for lunch, you know. And I think if you're going to be a visitor and you're going to walk across the Brooklyn Bridge, it's really nice to know what's in Dumbo and Brooklyn Heights when you get to the other side.
Right, and it's so much more charming than just a guide. Like, there's a lot of these sections where you write in depth about what exactly is a Brooklyn style pizza, and you go through the history here. I love this section, getting in on a CSA. Because there's so many in Brooklyn, which is exciting.
Yeah, they've become huge here. And I think the goal of the book was to have it be useful for someone who is a first-time visitor, who might be going to the Brooklyn Museum of Art and not know where they should have lunch, but also for someone who lives here and already, you know, reads Eater and knows, you know, they read New York Magazine. They know sort of what the latest new restaurants are. They don't really need me to tell them about Fatty Q and Pies and Thighs. They probably already know that.
Yeah.
So I tried to go in depth enough that even for someone who knows their neighborhood really well, they'll be able to learn something about other neighborhoods. And I also think a lot of Brooklynites, tell me if you agree, people know their own neighborhood like the back of their hand. They can tell you the best pizza place. If they live in Park Slope, they can tell you where to have lunch in Park Slope and where to have a drink and where to go for a date. But they might not know Carroll Gardens that well, or they might not know Williamsburg that well. And the subways don't necessarily connect every neighborhood that easily. Mm-hmm. So depending on where you live, I think you are such an expert on your own neighborhood, but maybe not on the rest of Brooklyn.
Yeah, I see what you mean, totally. Which neighborhood do you live in?
I live in Brooklyn Heights, which is kind of ironic because I actually say in the book, I think it's one of the least foodie parts of the borough. And that's starting to change, which I think is really exciting. Crop to Cup opened recently, and they carry Kumquat Cupcakery and some other local things.
Great.
And Iris Cafe opened recently, and they're doing some interesting things. But up until maybe a year ago, I wouldn't really have said Brooklyn Heights had very much for a visiting foodie, which makes me sad. You know, it's a beautiful neighborhood and I love living there, but it is not necessarily the heart of foodie Brooklyn.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I have to say I haven't explored too much in my neighborhood. I was not eating out for a while. I look forward to seeing your scopes of the best of the best in Crown Heights, which is where I live.
Oh, wow.
It's a Caribbean
absolutely
food mecca.
And I, as a travel writer, I've spent a lot of time in the Caribbean islands, and it was really exciting to me to try to track down that terrific food in New York and to find the Bajan place that does the fish cutter sandwiches with the homemade salt bread, just mm-hmm. like you can get in the islands. And I was pretty excited by what I found in the Caribbean parts of Brooklyn.
We all have to exchange best ofs mm-hmm. and, you know, where to get the craziest fruit juices.
The thing that's kind of exciting about it to me, though, is that the Caribbean restaurants in Brooklyn are more Caribbean than they are Brooklyn. You know, they kind of keep their own schedule. They might run out of food. They might start cooking the jerk chicken late if they don't feel like it.
That's an interesting thought.
A lot of them, like the jerk chicken places, you know, Jamaica is such a casual, laid-back kind of place. So I made this huge list of like 25 jerk chicken places that I had to go to. And most of them, I had to go back maybe 3 or 4 times because I would show up during business hours and they might be out of the jerk chicken or they might not be open, even though normally they're open.
But I didn't know that was like representative of the culture back home. And
it is. Yeah. I mean, people wouldn't be horrified by that in Jamaica. It's just sort of like, you know, people live their lives and they're really casual there.
There you go. Yeah. Whatever about mm-hmm. What's it? Consistency. Heck.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, let the days and seasons, whatever, just determine what you're doing.
For me, it was kind of frustrating because I needed to try the jerk chicken, and I finally had to say, like, okay, if I'm there 4 times and they don't have it, I have to give up.
Well, if you need a place to crash next time you're, like, doing extended. All right, so we're going to just have a quick song. We'll be right back. Thanks.
Where'd you get those eyes? Gosh, oh, get 'em. How'd they get so little? Gosh, oh, get 'em. How'd they get that size? Golly gee, when you turn those heaters on, woe is me, got to turn my cheaters on. Jeepers, creepers, where'd you get those peepers? Oh, those weepers, how they hypnotize. Where'd you get those eyes? And now the author, Johnny Mercer.
Jeepers, creepers, where'd you get those peepers? Oh, those weepers, how they hypnotize. Gosh, oh, get up, how'd they get so lit up? Gosh, oh, get up, how'd they get that size? Golly gee, when you turn those heaters on, woe is me. Gotta put my cheetahs on. Jeepers, creepers, where'd you get those peepers? Oh, those weepers, how they hypnotize.
Where'd hello, we're back eyes? On Let's Eat In. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. That was just a little fun number with a whole selection of Billie Holiday, everybody. It was fun. We couldn't figure out what to play. It happens. So this is Heritage Radio, brought to you today by Fairway Market, the world's largest market. No, the world's, what's the tagline?
The foodiest market?
Yeah. Something. We'll figure it out. Mm. Our guest today is Sherry Eisenberg, author of The Food Lover's Guide to Brooklyn. And you have written, I just love your little bio on the back. You've written about 370 cities in 33 countries. That's a lot.
Yeah, it feels like a lot.
Congratulations.
Yeah, one of the nice things about working on the book was being grounded for a certain amount of time because, you know, for my entire adult life, I've been a travel writer and I've been on the road constantly, and that has its own rhythm that's very different from someone who sort of works and lives in their hometown and stays put.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a fun aspect of working on the book, was just staying in Brooklyn.
Great. And is this your first book?
It is my first book.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you.
One of my favorite parts, of course, is that you, within this guide, provide a lot of recipes, and that's cool, because I'm always trying to, like, you know, recreate things, and, you know, the ricotta should be really fun. What was I going to say? I'm got distracted by looking at these cute little illustrations in it. Is there a thing that you like to make at home best? or the most?
You know, I love to cook in general. And for the time that I was working on the book, I wasn't cooking at all. Mm-hmm. And so I've just been really excited to
get... It must be like withdrawal. Yeah.
Yes. I'm sure you probably felt that way about not eating out. Going to restaurants probably had a little bit of satisfaction to it when you were finally able to go back to it.
Yeah.
And I feel that way about getting back into the kitchen and cooking myself.
Cool. So it's what do you think is like a good romantic date-worthy meal to cook for somebody?
You know, my husband would say any time that I didn't make him eat out with me was a romantic day-worthy meal. Because, it was such an intense experience of, you know, feeling forced to really go someplace new every night. But when we cook at home, I think one of the more fun things to make is fresh pasta.
Oh, yeah.
I think fresh pasta is really lovely.
Do you have a nice little pasta crank? And
you know, we've been doing it by hand. We haven't done a pasta crank. I know it takes so much longer, and I have to admit
that. Roll it out and then cut it into wide, fit it, whatever.
Into cut it into shapes.
Tagliatelle or something.
And we've done some tortellini and some ravioli, which has been fun. But I have to say, in working on the book, I found so many amazing fresh pasta places around the borough in the Italian neighborhoods. Bensonhurst has a bunch. Queen Anne Macaroni Company and Pastosa Ravioli. And they make, you know, every kind of fresh pasta you would imagine. And they make so many different types of raviolis that you could really have a different one all the time and not get bored with it.
Wow. Do you feel like inspired to try to top that kind of expertise?
I don't know. They're so good at it that in a way it has taken a little bit of the air out of the sails of my own pasta making, because it's just so easy to go buy some and have it be done perfectly.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, pasta, that's a tricky one. What about pizza? Is that something?
Yeah, I love to make pizza, but again, there's great pizza in Brooklyn. So what my husband and I have been doing is we've been making Chicago-style deep dish pizza at home, because that isn't something.
You can put it in a dish. And you don't have to worry about the hot, super, you know, pizza stone or something.
Yeah, you do it in a cast iron. We've been doing ours in a cast iron pan. And because you can get the great Brooklyn-style pizza in Brooklyn, I can't see sort of going through the effort to make my own when Roberta's and Lucali and everyone else do it so well. So we tend to do things that you can't get in Brooklyn.
Chicago pizza. That's
Chicago
funny.
Pizza, yeah.
What else is distinctive about that? Do they stuff the crust often? Have you done
know, it's
that?
Just really deep. It's like it's more like a pie in a way.
Yeah.
And the cheese is not on top. The tomatoes are on top. So it's
totally different.
Yeah. Have you had it before?
I didn't know that that was the case.
Yeah. The tomato sauce is on top, and then there's some grated cheese on top, like a Parmesan. But the mozzarella is underneath everything.
Bizarre.
It's totally, for a Brooklyn person, it's totally bizarre.
I'll have to go to Chicago sometime, or make it myself.
Yeah, or make it. It's really doable.
Cool. So what else are you working on right now after, or...
So I'm back to the travel writing, and that's been fun. And I've also been writing about Brooklyn a little bit. I did a piece for the LA Times a few weeks ago on pop-up restaurants in Brooklyn, which is fun.
Hey, what exactly how do you define that?
A pop-up restaurant?
Yeah.
I think it's, a restaurant that's in a space only maybe one day a week or 2 days a week. They don't own, it's not full-time their restaurant. It's something else the rest of the time.
I think Asia Dog?
So Asia Dog would definitely be a good example, although they're getting their own space, which I'm really excited for them. That's actually been the new trend, is people with pop-ups getting their own spaces. It's sort of like the Flea, you know, the Flea.
Yeah, they tried it out and then...
And then it works. I mean, I think there's been so much success that these food entrepreneurs have really found a real groove, and they've been able to make a living off of it. And so people are starting to open up restaurants who used to just be pop-ups, and people are starting to open up shops who used to just
be
pop-ups.
In this economy, too, that's pretty impressive.
It is. It's exciting, right? But I think one of the things this economy has taught us is, you know, there's really no stability anywhere in the world right now, so you should do what you love, you know?
Throw caution to the wind.
Exactly. Do what you're really passionate about.
I hear it. I hear you. So you must have started out as a journalist and then kind of ventured into travel and food.
Travel and food, yeah.
Were you always interested in food? And
I was. And I think as I traveled the world as a travel writer, maybe my assignment would be about hotels, or it would be about resorts or cruise ships or beaches. But what I was most interested in was the local food. So that's how I realized over the years that I'd want to do more food writing and less sort of straightforward travel writing. writing.
Mm-hmm. What was the favorite? Your favorite place you visited,
food wise?
Yeah, in the world.
In the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Singapore is such an exciting food destination, and I love traveling around Mexico for the food. That's really amazing. Hawaii has great food, yeah, I think those are probably some of my favorite. Of course, Paris. You know, people always say, like, do you think Brooklyn is the best food destination in the world? Maybe. Yeah. It's a really exciting food destination, but I fell in love with food studying abroad in Paris, really, for the first time. And so for me, you know, Paris is always going to be an exciting food food visit for me.
So how do I get your job?
Well, you're a food writer.
I want to go to Bora Bora and Singapore.
You know, I was the travel editor at a bridal magazine for a long time. And so a lot of the trips that I was doing were honeymoon stories. So that's why I was spending so much time in Hawaii and French Polynesia and Mexico and the Caribbean.
Cool.
But it was a good food education.
Yeah, I bet. Now you're a freelancer?
And now I'm freelance.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun. I'm really enjoying it.
Absolutely. And this book kicks off. You're going to have a fun party, launch party, hear, at the Brooklyn Kitchen.
At the Brooklyn Kitchen, yeah. Okay. So that's going to be fun. They're such an amazing space. I think what they're doing with their cooking classes and the Meat Hook Butcher and the fact that you can buy so many interesting local products there, I think they're really exciting.
It's a real
exciting
nice
business.
Big place now.
It is, right?
Goodness,
it's so big compared to their old space.
And so your party's going to be, the book is going to be on sale there. I'm sure, and tons of other places.
I mean, I was walking by the Barnes & Noble on Book Court, on Court Street, and I was like, oh, I'm just going to peek in and see if they have it. And it was in the New York section, which is really
terrific.
Fun. But yeah, all the independent bookstores have it too. I know Greenlight has it, and in Fort Greene, and Book Court has it in Cobble Hill too. So I think it's everywhere now, which is
terrific.
Nice.
So guys, check this out. And I do have to ask you, what is your favorite? Do you have a favorite?
Do I have a favorite?
Yeah.
I have a few favorites.
Okay.
And they're not really restaurants, actually. One of my favorite discoveries was Georgian Bread. Do you know this place?
No.
It's in Brighton Beach, Coney Island area. And they make this bread from Georgia. That's really all they do. It's the small bakery. And they have this kiln that I don't know if they built there or they flew in. And you go in, it's such a quirky little place. Every surface is covered with flour. And the baker in the back is covered in flour. And he has like a white bandana on, and he wears white clothing.
Does he have goggles on?
He probably should. I mean, it's kind of funny. But they make two types of bread. And one of them is sort of a plain bread, kind of like, I guess, their take on a baguette sort of thing. But the bread that I go there for is called kashapuri. And it looks a bit like a focaccia. It's puffy and porous like a focaccia. But you bite into it and cheese oozes out.
Ooh.
And it's just the most spectacular, I don't know, grown-up version of a grilled cheese.
Ooh.
It's really amazing.
So it's got to be hot.
Every time I've been there, and I've been there a good dozen times now at different times of the day, it's always hot. They always have a batch coming out of the oven. But the thing is, it's so hot, and that's when the cheese is the gooeyest. So I always find myself burning my lips on it because I don't want to wait till it cools down, you know?
Pizza. Well, that sounds amazing.
It's really great. Another place that I really love is NYC Icy. Have you been there?
Uh-uh.
They make their own water ice. And I'm originally from Philadelphia, so I'm a water ice girl from way back.
But water ice?
Theirs are not like the Philadelphia water ices I grew up in, where it's like lemon or cherry in a little cup.
Uh-huh.
And it's sort of neon colors. There's not a lot of actual lemon or cherry flavor probably going on in there. But at this place, they do theirs with fresh fruits. And they make one where they juice cucumbers and they turn it into water ice, and it's the most refreshing thing on a hot day.
That sounds perfect.
And one of their other flavors I'm in love with is Thai iced tea. They make a Thai iced tea water ice that is like spectacular, and the texture is really soft of their ice. It's really different.
Is it kind of like Italian ice? Or
it is kind of like Italian
smooth?
Ice only it's much smoother. It's much smoother.
Interesting. Why I wonder why they call it water ice.
I think because
it's fruit and water and ice, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Oh, sorry.
But it's also a totally different thing than the, Hawaiian ices, the Hawaiian shaved ice. Which is a different thing than this.
Interesting.
So
I'd like to get a survey of, like, I would love to read, because it sounds a lot like this Taiwanese specialty they have, and that is
With the sweetened condensed milk and the beans?
No, not like a slushy thingy, but it's like a firm like scoop.
Okay.
With like all this like real fresh fruit flavor and juice in it.
Mm.
But it's not chunky like a Hawaiian or shaved thing. It's like, it's more like an Italian ice, but it's not neon.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, so, it probably is like this then.
Warm climate places just know how to do this stuff.
They really do. Yeah. They really do.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's something I really like too. And I have to say, like, it's more refreshing than ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as much as I love Brooklyn Ice Cream Factory and Blue Marble and some of the amazing ice cream shops in Brooklyn, on a really hot day, the water ices are a little more refreshing.
Cool. And I gotta say, like, I was gonna ask you before, like, you know, or I think I did ask you, you know, does this inspire you to cook at home? But, you know, this stuff you can't make at home.
No.
You really
and it's
can't.
Changed the way I cook at home because mm-hmm. I did so much research on the best places to find fresh mozzarella and the best places to find fresh ricotta and pasta, and that I feel like now when I cook, I want to source from all over the borough.
Oh,
and I want to spend all day Saturday running around and picking up the ingredients at all the different places that you can get them from.
A Brooklyn food lover's meal.
Exactly.
Let's do it soon. All right, thanks so much, Sherry, for coming here. It's about all the time we have, but do check out this great book, The Food Lover's Guide to Brooklyn, just came out, and are you on Twitter?
Sherry
NYC?
I am. Sherry NYC on Twitter, and the website for the book is foodloversbrooklyn.com.
Cool. Thanks so much for joining.
Thank you.
Well, I'd like to thank Nat Wiener and Jack Inslee and our sponsor, Fairway Market, and we'll be here next week. I'm your host, Kathy Arroy. Thanks so much for listening to Let's Eat In.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.